there is a cap on the amount of supersedious and how much is, you know, necessary. And that cap is set at the lesser of $25 million or 50% of the judgment debtor's net worth. Determining net worth and other issues related to the cap, again, explored in more detail in the paper. One interesting note, if you have a negative net worth judgment debtor, they are excused from posting supersedious. But whether or not that judgment debtor is indeed a negative net worth entity or person can be contested under TRAP 24.2C. So, but matters of net worth and things of that, of course, as I said before, can be subject of discovery that can happen either pre or post judgment. What are the prerequisites to obtaining a supersedious in the trial court? Well, first, the judgment must be a final appealable order. At least that's the general rule. Some interlocutory orders can also be superseded. But as a general matter, supersedious is available for final appealable judgments. The judgment must be the subject of an actual appeal. So you can't suspend enforcement of a judgment just for its own sake. And judgments can no longer be superseded once all appellate remedies have been exhausted. So if you file a petition for review, it gets denied. You file a motion for rehearing of that denial, and that gets denied. Well, then you've exhausted your appellate remedies, and that ends the supersedious period. It's also worth noting that if a party fails to invoke the appellate court's jurisdiction, for example, by failing to timely file a notice of appeal, then that party cannot supersede the judgment. And that also applies to cross appellants too. So if you're seeking more favorable relief on appeal, you can only supersede if you timely comply with the deadlines on appeal. What is the effect of supersedious? Well, we kind of talked about this some, but it is obviously it suspends the enforcement of a judgment. If the writ of execution has already issued, let's say you wait until after 30 days to get your supersedious. If the writ of execution has already issued, once you obtain the supersedious bond, that writ must be immediately withdrawn. Note that superseding a judgment does not prevent the recording of a lien. As I had alluded to before, there is discovery available on supersedious matters. So parties can conduct discovery at any time, pre or post judgment, to determine issues relevant to the security on appeal. For example, the continuing adequacy of the security. And that could ultimately lead to a modification on the amount of the security later on if that's determined to be necessary. The central function of appellate security is to protect the judgment creditor from the delay or loss caused by the appeal. And it's important to continually assess the amount of the security to ensure that it's necessary to effectuate or that it's able to effectuate that purpose. The adequacy of the amount of supersedious is a matter that's it's a factual matter that again can be the subject of discovery. Post-judgment, pre-judgment. What about timing of supersedious? So as I kind of mentioned before, there's no time limit on when you can seek supersedious, but you should do so quickly because writs of execution can issue 30 days after either the final judgment being entered or orders on the final post-judgment motions. So let's talk about the different options that we have. So what is going to be the best option for your client when it comes time to supersede your judgment? Well, the most popular is a supersedious bond, and that is an instrument issued by a surety whereby the obligor binds itself to pay the judgment as well as damages caused by the delay in the appeal. Including interest and costs up to the amount of the current cap, to the judgment creditor up to the amount of the security in the event the appeal is affirmed or the appeal is dismissed. That's TRAP 24.1 through 2. A surety can be an individual or a corporation. The supersedious bond must be approved by the clerk, and it must be sufficient to accomplish those the point of supersedious, which, like I said, is to ensure that the judgment is paid and that any cost related to the delay caused by an appeal is compensated. You can also supersede by private agreement. And so parties can privately agree to consideration offered in exchange for a covenant to delay or forego execution of the judgment. The requirements for that must be in writing, and it must set forth the terms of the agreement. It must be signed by the parties or their counsel, and it must be filed with the trial court. Maybe you've got a client that's just sitting on a big pile of cash and they don't want to mess with all that other stuff and they just want to write a check. You can supersede a judgment with a cash deposit. It must be in the amount fixed for the surety bond, conditioned in the same manner as would be a surety bond for the protection of the other parties. The judgment debtor actually physically transfers possession of a cashier's check payable to the clerk of court, who then deposits those funds into the court registry.